If needlework is your passion, whether you're stitching by hand, machine, or mixing it all up, you're going to want to hear about the Mr. X Stitch Contemporary Needlework Prize 2025. This prize celebrates the best in modern stitch and it's open to creatives from all around the world, whether you're a student or an emerging artist or a seasoned professional. And the best part, you don't have to send your work anywhere. Just upload high-resolution images to a private folder we will send you after you enter. You can enter more than one category, for instance, hand embroidery and 3D textiles. Just grab an entry for each one. And if you've got a student ID, you can get 50% off the entry price as well. The deadline for entering is 30th of June 2025, and entries are now open at xstitchmag.com/prize-entry. Thanks to our brilliant sponsors, Bookmarked Hub by Search Press and David and Charles, and the legends at Lowry Workstands. If you've got the stitch bug, this is your time. Show us what you've got. Enter the prize now. Visit xstitchmag.com/prize-entry to get your ticket today. Daniel Clough, aka Fiance Knowles, is a South African needlework artist known for her vibrant, expressive works, which are characterized by bold colors and packed with a love and a joyful visual impact that makes them instantly recognizable and highly desirable. This is the second part of my needle exchange with Danielle. Last week, we discovered how she invented needlework and how she came to be the legend that is Fiance Knowles. This time, we dig into her colour theory, which is something really fascinating. Like, Danielle's work uses colours in ways that are just magnificent. And it's great to understand the science behind that and what her philosophy about this is. It's something that she also teaches online as well. We talk about procrastination, we talk about commercial projects and more. We talk about an interesting collaborative project that she's got going on with some fellow creatives in and around Cape Town. And obviously we dig into her favourite types of music, favourite types of books, all those kind of juicy things. We find out an interesting secret that not a lot of people know about Danielle, something that I think she's working through. But as is bound to be the way when you talk to your fiance Knowles, it's a great chat. I absolutely love her. I love her work. I love her as a person. She's a darn fine individual, and it's been an honor having a needle exchange with her. So I hope you like this one. I'll be back next week with another conversation with a different artist. And if you like this show, please do leave us a review on your favorite podcasting platform. That would be amazing. It makes me sound even better than I already do. Oh, yes, indeed. Anyway, enough about me. Here's Danielle. Enjoy the show. I would like to ask you about colour theory and specifically your use of colour, because I know that you have a philosophy about it and I think it merits sharing.
Well, I believe my philosophy on colour is that everybody has a colour language. This is kind of what I teach, is that like we all have an innate colour language. So when you open up your cupboard and you see your clothes, or when you go to a fabric store and you see three different types of floral fabrics. So the same floral fabric, different colorways. One will stand out more than the others. So my thing is like you have an innate color language, right? So it's not really about colors being right or wrong. Because I know a lot of people are like, how do you choose the right colors? Colors aren't right or wrong. You have the colors that you like, the colors that bring you joy, that make you happy. Those colors are right. When it comes to your work, those colors are right. And then it's about how do you utilize them. So there's a saying, I don't know who said it, but I'm going to pretend like I do. That color gets the credits, but value does the work.
So the most important thing
to understand is values. So if we can all see in black and white, right? You watch a black and white movie, you see a photograph in black and white, you can tell what it is. It is legible to our eyes, to our brains. So really, that's not about color. That's about value. It's about dark areas and light areas. So you can apply in a dark area. If you imagine in front of you a black and white, whatever you're looking at, imagine taking a snapshot, you put it in black and white. And the dark areas in that photograph, you can apply that dark area. It can be a dark green. It can be a dark blue. It can be a dark red, which is brown. It can be a dark green. it doesn't matter what it is. It matters that the values are right. In the light areas, those can be, or in the mid-tone areas, it can be any color, really. It's just about making sure that the value that's in that area is right. So when it comes to my work, I just try and like get the values right. Say if I want to put it, I'll just look in my box and I'll be like, oh, I really want to use pink. I'm all like excited and jazzed about pink. Or I pre-choose a color palette. So I'll say, like at the moment, I'm working on a piece that's yellows, greens, and pinks with some oranges or purples in there just to like tie it together. And I just try and appropriately put the right shade of pink in the right kind of area, the right yellows, the right, you know. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. And I think it makes sense in the terms of your work as well, because you'll often marry up, I don't know, blues and pinks. So you'll marry up colors that are natural bedfellows, but the way that you do it, I guess, expresses those values. And so it kind of works. And from what you're saying, as long as you go, a dark space needs a darker color than a light space, if you think about it in black and white terms, then you can put two colors together however you want. It should still produce the right results.
Yeah. It will still be legible to your brain, for sure. So, yeah. So everything really just works on values. So, like, even when you look around, and you think about a spectrum. So when I teach, I teach like 1 to 5. So a very light, a mid light, a medium dark, and a dark. And then you take a photograph and you break it up into islands. So say now you take a piece of tracing paper, you trace around your lightest area, you trace around your darkest area, you trace around your middle areas, and then those kind of the spaces, the tones in between. And using those 5 tones of, you know, light, middle, dark, and then applying any color. So if you're, it does get a bit time thirsty, then, you know, you're 1, 2, 5. So if you decide that your darkest tone is going to be a dark blue and your lightest tone is going to be like a really light yellow, your middle tone is going to be pink, and then, you know, your tones and your shades in between all match up from the 1 to 5, you're going to have a workable color palette. So that's really what it is, creating a color palette. And then the most exciting part is that color palette can be anything that makes you happy. So that's like neon pink, black, and tan. Go for it.
Yeah, I think it's interesting as well, because that idea of having 4 zones is something, it was making me think about when you get quilts and applique, that kind of work can't have the tone or gradation that you can get by thread painting and that kind of thing. So they do have to make those decisions. Luke Haynes did a lot of portraits, and it would be that thing. They'd just be like 5 colours. And like you say, I guess he's mapped out those islands, can make those pieces and then quilt the whole thing together.
Yeah, a great way to also see it is to, like, I wouldn't say study, because it sounds like a lot more complicated than it is, but to just like really look at stencil art. So like stencil art that's made of like different, you know, you can even Google like 4 full color stencil, and then you'll see there's like 1, 2, 3, 4. That's the same thing, you know, you can essentially make quilts and patterns and stuff out of that. You can even do embroideries and silk stitch, and you'll get shading. And obviously the more steps you have, if it's a 7 or 8 or 9 color stencil, then it's workable.
Yeah. And I guess realistic. It would be the same with like lino print and that kind of thing, isn't it? It's that same, like you say, stencils and prints. There's a book that we've got, I'm just looking it up now, called Issan Boshi, The 1-Inch Boy, and it's by Ichinori. And it's a story about a boy who's like 1 inch tall and like what happens to him. But the art style is basically, it's like lino print, but there's only 3 colors. There's an orange, there's a blue, and there's a yellow. And obviously some of it happens with the overlap between those 2 colors, but it's just stunning. Because it's so simple and yet it's so like well crafted just with those applications of those colours.
And those colours will be different values, right? So I'm sure it's a dark blue, a light. So your brain can read it.
Yeah. And the thing is when you deconstruct it as the way you've done there, suddenly it seems a lot clearer. I think I'm having a moment of clarity. I'm sure in about 2 hours' time I will be back in the fog again. What do you think about when people's colour tastes change? What's that all about? You know, like, for instance, like, I don't know, we've moved houses quite a few times, and the wallpapers that we had in 2 houses ago, we look at them now and we don't feel like they're the right colours for the property that we live in. We don't, you know, my wife is the colour genius in our house. There's a lot more pink in this house than there has ever been in another house. And I just wonder what your take on how that comes to bear, how we evolve through our color preferences?
I think maybe it's like it's exposure is one part of it. You know, you start seeing, it's the same as skinny jeans. I don't know if you remember when you saw skinny jeans for the first time, you're like, what is going on here? You people look crazy. And then like maybe 3 months later, you're like, you look really neat. You don't make me look amazing. Right. So I think there's something to do with that. I know that, you know, and colors go in and out of fashion. Like if you think about pink, I mean, my house is full of pink and it's that like dusky granny mm-hmm. pink, which I'm pretty mm-hmm. sure when it was in fashion 40 years ago, they weren't like, this is granny pink and I love it. I'm pretty sure they were like, this is very contemporary. So I think it's kind of like that. Like I've recently kind of shifted into like a very yellow phase. I don't know how that happened, but I've also been like really loving like a 70s aesthetic. So I think it's just, but it's also exposure. I think I'm starting to see more and more yellows and mustards and browns kind of coming in around me. So, and you know, we do also get sick of what's around us, like the hedonic treadmill. You know, you buy a lot of blue and then you see a lot of blue and then it doesn't resonate the same way as when you saw it the first time when everything was yellow. So, yeah, I think it's just, and we change. You know, skinny jeans.
Oh, I was thinking about them again the other day. Now, man. Jesus.
Do you? You always hated them.
The problem I've got is I've got like kind of Scottish legs. I've got quite large calf muscles. So it just doesn't work. They just ride up.
A large calf?
Yeah. I'm very good at like heavy lifting.
So the bottom's wider than the top?
No, I'm not like a freak. Like I've got quite big thighs as well. It's just that skinny jeans and me just aren't happy. Because like I say, what happens is over time, they just slowly ride up. And then I'm like, now you can see my ankles and see what horrible socks I'm wearing. Do you find that color evolution thing, is that something you can feel when you're making work? Like you might be stitching a certain color way as an average and maybe you go, actually, I'm getting a little bit tired, or is it quite fluid, or is your use of color dependent on the subject matter?
I think it's very fluid. Yeah, I think I can see the evolution. I can see there's times where I go through stuff, but then it's funny. It's like I keep trying to break a certain pattern of like very strong orange, very strong warm tones, and like and solid blue and purple shadows, and then I see myself kind of like going back towards there. So I'm trying to consciously limit myself and to break those patterns, but it is quite fluid. You know, you do have that like innate kind of like comfort in certain colors, and then I find myself wanting to change and then changing and then like, but having to make like a big effort to do that.
I guess your use of colors. Yeah. There's no wrong answer here, I don't think. But I think I would always say to people, like if they were stitching something that was quite big of a certain color palette, it's good to have something small of a different color palette just so that you can give yourself that break when you need it. But I guess with your work, your use of color is fairly across the spectrum. So I guess you don't get too bored. Like this piece that I was talking about that I'm doing is four shades of blue. And already I can tell I'm getting a little bit bored of it. So I might have to do something that's a little bit yellow or something. Yeah, just to kind of.
Yeah. A lot of my color choices are because of that feeling is that, you know, I'll be working with something, especially in the beginning when I hadn't really figured out color, it's all been very like natural, like intuitively built. I'd be like working on something and I'm like, if I have to see another shade of orange, I'm gonna put, and then I'll just be like, okay, I'll get green, I'll just grab the green and I'll figure out like how to, and then I'll see it in the box and it looks so juicy and I just like have to use it and I'll grab it and I'll just figure out where it belongs, you know. So there's been a lot of that in my work, and then like figuring out how to use it, which kind of built the understanding of values and color. But that feeling, I know it so well. That feeling of like four shades of blue, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
I know. It seems like a good idea. It's a valid thing that I'm doing, but I must admit, I'm just a bit like,
it's going to be beautiful when it's done.
Somebody else can be the judge of that. Punch needle. That was the other thing I wanted to ask you about. You've done a bit of punch needle. You did a very groovy piece not that long ago. Yeah. So how did you feel about punch needle?
So actually, the reason we got the punch needle and I started it is I was asked to do like an interactive embroidery at a festival. It's called Green Pop. So it's like a tree planting festival. And I was like, sure, I'll do an interactive embroidery. And then I was like, well, what? what's an intro? And then try to figure it out. And I worked with my friend Cynthia. She's part of this collective that we've just launching now. And she's a ceramicist, and she works quite with a lot of like two-dimensional design. And I found that we kind of like spoke back and forth about how do we make this interactive embroidery. And what it ended up doing is we built a big 2.2 meter by 1 meter canvas. And then we had faces on the front that people could embroider from the front, and then punch needle the back, like designs from the back. So it could be worked on from both sides. So we were like, this is a brilliant idea. And then we're like, but now how do we punch needle? So, so we got some punch needles. We got a little punch drunk, maybe had a bit too much wine, figured out how to use it in front of a fireplace. It was magical. And then we took it to this festival. And then from there, I really enjoyed working and moving, putting it into backgrounds and like kind of integrating it as like a different texture. Imagine trying to do that in the future with tufting. I'd love to do something big with like big embroidered elements. So yeah, that was kind of how the punch needle. It's great. I mean, for me, there's limitations in terms of shading. So it kind of needs to be the container for the embroidery. But yeah, it's lots of fun.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people doing tufted rugs. I mean, I interviewed Leave On Rude, who does fantastic tufted rugs. She's Needle Exchange. I'm going to say number 6. Look it up wherever you get your podcasts. And I really like the look of it. There's a real immediacy there when you do those kind of pieces. But you did one that was particularly catching. I'm trying to find the name of it, but it was of a sort of a lady, like just the jacket was like greens and yellows and reds and symbols on them and all those kind of things. And just the texture of that was almost like it was a perfect fit, because what the face was embroidered, very kind of smooth and elegant. And then you just got this real like jackety thing going on.
Yeah, that's I can't remember what I called it. I think it's looking back, something like looking good, looking back, or something along those lines. So it was a part of it, a 3 series of somebody looking kind of like in the distance, somebody looking straight into the camera, and then someone looking over their shoulder. And it was part of the exhibition that I did last year at Paradigm Gallery. I did a show called Sunstrings Attached. So it was part of that. I love doing that. I've actually been approached recently to do another portrait. I don't know, fingers crossed it works out, but another portrait in that style for magazine. And I'm excited to take that again to another level.
Yeah, that's very groovy. That's very groovy. Tell me about the collective. That sounds interesting.
Oh, very exciting. Very, very excited about this. So we are called Coda Collective, and we are working towards a show. So there are 4 of us at the moment. One is a oil painter, another is a painter who works more like two-dimensional painting style, and then Cynthia the ceramicist. So and we're working together on a show. We're doing our first show, like our mini launch show in September, and we've got our location, and we're doing a couple collaborations. We're all collaborating together with Cynthia to do like ceramic. I'll be doing like a ceramic embroidery piece. Andrew, he's painting on ceramics, and he's doing like a very Western style thing. And we're just kind of trying to create, because we all have done shows, we've all exhibited, but we wanted to kind of see what it's like without the guardrails of a gallery. I say that I worked with Paradigm in Philadelphia last year. I love them. I'm super excited to do a show with them again. I've also only ever done, other than with them, only ever done shows myself. So it's not kind of new for me, but for the other artists, it's quite exciting for us to like build this thing together. And we'll be doing workshops through the show, collaborations. So yeah, and then hopefully build up a system where we can bring in other artist friends and, you know, keep making a platform where we have like a little bit more autonomy on how we present ourselves and build our careers and our creative energies together, I guess.
How does it feel to be collaborating with people of different disciplines? I guess that's quite different to other collaborative jobs you've done.
It's exciting. I mean, we have a lot in common, and we're close friends, you know. So we'll be like, we just did a 5-day hike in Nature's Valley. It's a beautiful, beautiful part of South Africa. And we're all like on this hike, and we're all together. And we're like, wouldn't it be cool if we like did a piece that's like from one of the photos on the hike? And they're like, Cynthia can like make this, you know, and we just get all like so jazzed about it. Mm. It obviously has its hiccups. Well, not hiccups, but it has its nuances because we're also friends. So we've got to like figure out how to like be completely diplomatic and like, you know, sometimes I was saying, sometimes it feels like a little bit more of a like a consensus than a collaboration. You know, we've got like WhatsApp polls, like, what are we going to call this? But this is actually, you know, to keep the friendships going. But it's amazing. And it's really beautiful to work with people you love in such a passionate way.
Yeah, because there's nothing like, oh, I'm trying to think, I'm sure there's a phrase that's almost like, you know, when a community decides about an art project, it's like the most boring art project you've ever seen, because there's so many opinions, isn't it? You don't really get that fire that you can get with like two people working together or something.
Exactly. So there's four of us at the moment, well, four of us as a core. And yeah, there's obviously always like a little bit of a sway, so that takes a bit of negotiating, but it's great. You know, we also kind of doing this with our own autonomy inside this like group. So we all have different skills, like Andy and Olivia, who are part of it. They have done a lot of shows, like a lot of proper shows. Like they've done a lot of like, you know, worked with a lot of galleries, understand things like artist statements, things like that. From me with a corporate background, like I'm just like make stuff and figure out what to do with it. But they have like real like understanding of how to like build a proper show. And Cynthia and I both have a much more corporate background, so we're much better at like, well, not better, but we're a little bit more inclined to build systems around it, so documenting it, creating design, starting Instagram account, like that kind of stuff. So together we're like pulling on different strengths, and yeah, we'll see how it goes. I guess early days, people have to have the show.
It sounds like a very powerful combination. It sounds like it's all the right things as well, isn't it? Because it's like you can work out how to put on the show, you can secure the funding, and you can also produce the limited to different product range that will help support the artists as they move forward.
Exactly. Even Cynthia and I are we're going to do a collaborative workshop. So I've done workshops with her with block printing on fabric. And then it's like, well, we can block print one day and stitch the next, you know? So really creating like interesting interactive workshops that can bring people, you know, just a lot of joy, you know, and being involved in that collaboration themselves.
Yeah. Are there any other like projects you've got on the horizon?
Maybe this magazine thing, which I can't say much more about. My focus really is on the show. So I've finished two pieces so far, nearly finished the third, and trying to lean into that, you know, not let the corporate kind of distractions keep me away from actually building a body of work, which is really difficult for me because I'm so used to briefs and guardrails. So then to kind of just go like into the ether and make stuff is can find quite challenging.
Well, I suppose I suppose a collaborative thing in some ways is a bit like you're going into the ether, but you're holding someone's hand. So in some ways, that's a nice in-between phase, right?
Totally. And to have people that are so supportive, that whose like creative opinions you just trust so much, is just, it's really, really special.
Go on, but you're about to drop a bombshell.
Oh, I don't know when they're coming, but I have been working on, and it took about a year because it was a personal project, so I took on all these distractions, a pair of boxing gloves. And they are currently sitting with, I'm super excited. So they've finished, they're currently sitting with Jason, who makes them in Florida, makes gloves. So we're working together on them, and don't know when they're coming, but they're coming, and I'm so excited.
I hear they're going to be a knockout. Very good. I'm here all day. Right, I'm going to move on to some hardcore questions now. We've done all the easy what is art and what is color theory questions. Do you have a favorite band / album?
I've been loving Little Sims at the moment. I don't know the name of the album. I'm just doing like Little Sims on Spotify. And a classic, also Little, is Little Dragon. I'm like always, I'll always go back to Little Dragon, always. And Jamie XX.
Oh, yeah. Have you heard his new single?
No.
The latest one. Oh, he's got one that came out about a month ago. It's really like upbeat. Yes. Like he can often be a little bit dark feeling, Jamie XX, can't he? Whereas this one's like a proper bouncy summer tune. I love that. I'm guessing you do listen to music when you're working or you watch South African soap operas. But do you have different types of music for different types of projects or anything like that?
I don't listen to music when I work.
Do you not?
I'm shocking. I'm absolutely shocking. I just fill my brain with trash. I rewatch stuff. The Sopranos, mm-hmm. which is not trash. Mm-hmm. The Mentalist, House.
Okay.
Absolute, just, it's shocking. CSI, a lot of CSI.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Better double cross me. I've got all the information.
I'm pretty sure there's police officers who are like, oh God, we've got another one here. We've got someone who thinks they're a forensic detective because they're just like, should we put some powder down? Something or other. So that's interesting. Is that because you just want like hubbub and you don't need to pay a lot of attention to it? That kind of thing.
Because I'm thinking, I think I like get into my own head. So the TV kind of is like company, especially that's why I think I've thought about this a lot because I'm obviously have a lot of TV shame. But I think it's the company, especially with series like The Mentalist or House, where like 20 minutes in, it's lupus. You know, you like always know. You know what's going to happen. You know, it's going to have a fight with whatsoever. And it's so you kind of like there's a formula. It doesn't demand anything from me. So what I'll do is I'll watch, maybe listen to like a podcast or two, like The Daily or Ologies or something like really interesting. And then I kind of have like my brain quota of the day, like the stimulation. And then I just want to switch off and like be with the work. But I like the company. So the TV is like the company. And then I just like will switch. Occasionally I listen to music, but I also find music too exciting. So I'll like get up and I'll like dance and I start like cleaning. So I just like the TV is company and I just switch. And then I'm there with the work and in my own thoughts. And I can think more and be more present with the work.
And I guess maybe as well, though, rewatching means that you've already seen it, so you can't get too swept up in it. And then some of these other shows, like you say, they can be on and they keep you company, but you're not going to be diving into it.
Totally. If I see something that looks really good, I'll be like, I can't watch that.
What was the last good show then that you watched when you weren't stitching? Like the last good thing you watched?
Ripley. Have you seen Ripley?
It's in the queue.
Exquisite. It is so like the storyline is great. Like the storyline is, and obviously you even know the storyline if you've seen the original with Matt Damon. But it's like every image is just so beautifully composed, so beautifully lit. It's just so visually glorious. And it's a great exercise for color theory if you want to be like, there's my darks, there's my nits, there's my lights.
I love it. Really beautiful. I heard someone saying that you know, not only is Andrew Scott a great actor, but he's a great actor who's in the precise point in space that he needs to be to get that shot looking awesome. Like I was saying, like someone was saying, it's like, it is beautiful. Every single shot of it is beautiful.
It is so beautiful. And even when it's dark and macabre, it's just like so considered and the pace is really special. And you know, it's somewhere also between like Art House, which is a little bit above my pay grade, and like commercial TV, you know, it just like lives in a really beautiful space. I think it's incredible.
Yeah, and sometimes when you get those shows, there was a TV show that came out a couple of years ago called The English, and it had Emily Blunt in it, and it was about an English woman who came over to the newly formed United States of America. I think she was trying to find like the person who shot her husband, something or other like that. But that, again, the art direction of it, the skies, like I want to watch it again, not because of the story. I just want to look at like the cinematography of it because it's just so beautiful. And sometimes you need that, don't you? You can just watch a show and just be like, I'm going to have to knock. Yeah, I'm going to knock Ripley up the list of things to watch because we keep saying it. We just watched Andrew Scott in, what is it, To Get All of Us Strangers? I think that's what it's called, the film that he was in.
Oh, I've heard it's very good.
Yeah, it's very good. And at first, I wasn't sure I was going to be into it, because I like Andrew Scott and I like Paul Mescal, but I was a bit like, they're both very good looking and it's just going to be a bit. But as the story progresses, it gets more and more like left field. So by the end, Mary isn't that into left field stuff. So she was disappointed by the end of it. And I was like, this is absolutely brilliant. It makes no sense whatsoever at the end. You know, it's like very enjoyable. So I'd recommend that, that's for sure. Okay, so we've done TV. Have you got a good film you've seen lately? Do you have a favourite film?
A favourite film? Oh, also, don't judge me. I love Pain and Gain with The Rock and Mark Wahlberg.
Which one?
They're wrestlers. It's based on a true story. They're wrestlers that they kidnap this guy and they're like bodybuilders.
I don't think I've heard of that.
And it's also, it's like super saturated. It's kind of a dark comedy, crime, true story combination. And I don't know why, but it works. It works for me.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, beauty's in the eye of the beholder. There's no reason why we should, you know, I don't judge any of these things. I just take a note of them. That's pretty good.
Do that. And The Sopranos. I'm a huge Soprano fan. I may or may not have the game that I absolutely destroy at.
I love it.
But have no one to play because nobody loves it as much as I do.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you're one of those. Yeah, no, not going to play. My sister-in-law is ridiculously good at Boggle, which is a game where you kind of shake cubes that have got letters on them and then you have to look and make as many words as possible out of it. And it's so annoying to play. What have you, last good book you've read? Do you have a favourite book, that kind of thing?
I am a huge fan of Victoria Finlay. And she wrote Colors Travel Through the Paint Box, which is kind of like each chapter is a different color. And she talks about the history of the color as well as her journey with the color. And she's just incredible. I think she's one of my favorite writers ever. And she's come out with a book, I think, a year and a half ago called Fabric, which is like this big. But every now and then I get into that book. So, yeah, she's hands down my favorite writer. And then obviously another book that also thread related is Through the Eye of a Needle, the book by Claire Hunter.
Through the Needle? Yeah, it could be. Yeah, I've got it.
Through the Needle. Yeah. And she also just love how she writes about the history of needlework, and she just puts them into different chapters and just gives such an amazing perspective on different elements and different like psychologies around needlework. It's, yeah. I read a lot of books about needlework.
It's interesting, right? Because in some ways, you're not dissimilar to me. Like, I sort of meandered into the world of needlework to whatever position I've got. And I think you're similar. And then how much do you find that the broad context... I don't feel like it affects you, but like the same as me, after a while you have to go, actually, needlework's a thing that's been done around the world for millennia. I ought to just give that some consideration. I don't know what your feeling about that is.
I think for me, I was like so determined in the beginning to not know anything about it once I realized that it was that I hadn't invented it and it had been around for centuries and then that I was like, I don't want to know the rules. I don't want to know the traditional way of doing stuff. Like, I would just use any fabric I could find, any thread that I could find. And I was like, I'm not going to be told that I'm wrong. I just don't want to know what's right and what's wrong, because that's just going to stifle this thing that I love so much, you know. And because I was studying and I had all these other creative outlets that were actually my job, I was very protective of keeping needlework just my thing that didn't have any expectations on it. It didn't have any pressure. It was just mine. So I really kept myself as far away from like how-to books, craft books, history, traditional techniques, all of that. I just didn't want to know. And then I think after I gained like confidence in my style and confidence in the way that I was approaching it, and it started like moving into a different territory, I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. Like, oh my gosh, I didn't actually know that like black work was from this, and this is how the stories were told in black work. You know, when information comes into your orbit. And then I was like, it's kind of amazing. And then like, I never thought, you know, you think about pictures of Henry VIII and like him painted up there with this like ridiculously big hat and these robes and like his book ass. And you kind of like, oh, that's all actually hand embroidered. That's mad.
Yeah.
And then like I started getting really excited about the history of it because it no longer like hinged itself on being a it didn't feel like repressive. It felt like, oh, I'm actually a part of this, like now I'm this tiny, 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 tiny little speck on this massive ancient like path of as rich, like multicultural, multi-generational legacy that is innate in all of us. And like realizing like we have been, as humans, have been embellishing cloth since the beginning of wearing cloth. You know, like we can't help it. We want to put stuff in our hair. We want to put stuff in our ears. We want to put stuff on our clothes. And that's like so rad. And then just being like getting really excited about it and then just wanting to soak it all up. So I think that's kind of how the shift happened for me.
I can see that. That makes sense because it's kind of like you don't want it to define you. You want to forge your own version of this thread stitching that you invented without being told about how it should be because it was done like that in the 18th century. But yeah, then there comes a point, isn't it, when suddenly you're like, wow, like this stuff's amazing, you know. And I think it just is, you know, I can remember going to Guatemala on a holiday and just seeing some people who had embroidery on their clothes and just being like, yeah, you know, we're all part of this thing.
Totally. That's exactly how I feel, you know. And when people are like, I'm open to being wrong. I'm pretty sure I'm wrong about this. But when people are like, what is it like doing this granny art? I'm like, it's not granny art. You are seeing it through a single lens and you're imagining. I was like thinking about like English style or like Anglified like embroideries that debutantes did. That is one tiny, tiny, tiny spectrum of what embroidery is. Just think about South America. Do you think about that as, you know, those hapiles, I think they call, I can never pronounce the right word. But when you think about that, do you think of it as granny art? You don't. Do you think about it as like this beautiful, rich, like culturally significant like attire? And you think about like the embroidery in South China and like the Yunnan province. And you're like, don't think like, oh, that's such sweet granny art. You're like, that is crazy, you know? And it's like, it's just, yeah. So I get all worked up, as you can tell, when people think about embroidery as just this one thing, because like you say, we are like a part of this huge, huge community of makers. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's bonkers, isn't it? I mean, I like Lego, but Lego's only been around for like 60 years. And yet, like you say, needlework's been around for like 60,000 years or whatever. It's insane.
I have a feeling that there are more museums for Lego than for needlework, though. So you're probably onto something.
Is there an interesting fact that not a lot of people know about Danielle Clough?
I actually thought about something the other day. I was like, I don't know if people, anyone knows about me. I guess that I am a bit of a hoarder. I'm a recovering hoarder, not one that needs to be televised. So with that,
thanks. Has come, I've got like, seven tellies.
So with that has come like strange collections of things. Oh, there's one. And I went through a phase of collecting ceramics, like ceramic animals. I had like tons of ceramic animals. And I maybe had about like 30 of them or at one farm, 30 to 40 ceramic animals. And then when I was in the recovery phase of my excessive collecting, I started leaving them around Cape Town. So I like would hide them in restaurants and put them like in flower bays and stuff like that. So there was a period of my life where I was a gorilla ceramic graffiti artist, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. I used to know someone who she still like makes needlework and stuff now, but back in the day, she used to be known as the fastener, and she would make like small amigurumi figures and then like cable tie them to lampposts and leave them for people and stuff. I love the idea of that. The other thing that made me think of though, is like in the ceramics industry, there must've come a point, let's say it was 100 years ago, when suddenly they worked out how to make anything out of ceramics. And then they went, let's make everything out of ceramics. Because when you look around some of these vintage shops, like the amount of random things, if you want, I don't know, 4 carrots balanced on a pickle barrel, someone made it out of ceramics. They made everything, didn't they?
Totally. No, they're a mess. And there's a secondhand store where my little studio is. And obviously somebody decided to get rid of their collection or pass or something. And they were so into terriers. They are just Yorkshire Terriers, ceramic Yorkshire Terriers all over that shop. I mean, they're framed pictures. They're framed that just have terriers on top that you can put your own picture in. I mean, there must be 40 different types of terriers in that place. And that means that they're 40 different ceramic people who are into terriers.
Yeah.
That's a lot of terriers, a lot of ceramic terriers.
And at some point, the ceramics company went, yeah, we can make another terrier. They never went, they haven't got enough terriers now. They're like, no, why not
have a terrier? Why do we do one with a bow on its head? We don't have any bows on their head. That's a great idea. These are going to sell. These are going to fly. I also realized with ceramic in my collecting is that they're not all painted equal. So a lot of them have got like the wildest eyebrows, like dogs, specifically ceramic dogs. We'll just have these like mad eyebrows painted on. And you're just like, yeah, who gave that guy the painting, the ceramic job?
Is there a Tumblr about that somewhere, do you think?
Oh, I wish I had started that. That would be great.
That would be rad, wouldn't it? That was amazing. Hey, Danielle, thanks for having the needle exchange. Mm.
Oh, absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Good. Right, I shall stop that. That was good. Thanks for joining me on another needle exchange. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'd love to hear from you, so feel free to email hello@needle.exchange, that's NWDL.exchange, with any thoughts, comments or feedback. And if you want to keep up with all the news, sign up to the Needle Exchange mailing list at bit.ly/needleexchange. See you next time.